Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the Dean Show. And I have special guests here with us coming from New York. Sheikh Omar, how are you?
Good, alhamdulillah. I'm doing good.
So how are things in New York?
New York, you know, is at least for the most part of the last 100 years has been the, you know, capital of the world. And so things are going according to plan over here. And usually Washington, D.C. Can be considered like the capital of America. But New York is really like the capital of the world. This is where the United Nations is. This is where a lot of the world elite has invested themselves.
Now, you talked about not too long ago how Islam actually saved France. Can you give us the gist of the message that you were trying to get out to the world?
Yes, yeah, so I forget the name of the king. I think it was Louis IV or VI. Maybe you can correct me if you remember. But, the Crusades were going on. And so this was part of one of the events of the Crusades. And the point was that there was real statesmanship back then, you know, real statesmanship. And there was a respect for what we can say, the other. So during one of these crusades or one of these wars, Muslims actually captured the king. And they could have done anything. They could have killed him. But they did what usually is done in situations like that, especially in those times, which was to ransom the prisoners of war. And he was treated just like any other prisoner of war. Of course, the ransom was much more, but, you know, he was returned back to them. And so Muslims were the first ones to reach out to the Franks. This is during the Abbasid Empire. I mean, Muslims had a confrontation with the Orthodox Christians on the one side. And so we were, you know, constantly dealing with Constantinople. And then on the other side was the Franks. And so the Muslims, Harun Rashid, the Khalifa of that time, he reached out to them and he sent them many gifts. He sent them an elephant. That was the first time an elephant got to the European continent. And it was the talk of the town. This elephant was the talk of the town. And then, you know, they sent him a water clock that would, like, you know, using water mechanics, this ball would come out every hour. So there would be like 12 windows, and the ball would come out every hour and make a noise, which the priests of that time thought was devilish, so they destroyed the clock. And then he gave them many other gifts, you know, gold plates and silver plates and things like that. So there were these, you know, noble exchanges, and there was trade between the Franks and the Muslims soon after that time. And then, you know, things changed. That's how it started. And then things changed after that, after 500-600 years. So we owe each other as people quite a lot. Because even technology, which was transferred, because this was, you know, the first, you could say, cultural show of that technology that the Muslims had at that time. And even when the Prophet said, "Antalida amnata rabbataha," that the Ummah would produce its Rabb, meaning the Ummah of Muhammad would produce its own master, is one of the ways you can look at that saying of the Prophet. So we transferred technology that made them interested in us. And that's how it kind of, like, that's one of the first, like, reach out, we have something, we can benefit with each other, happened. And so, you know, then they started getting the knowledge we had. But we treated them overall much better, even though we made mistakes too. But we have overall treated them much, much better than they treated us, especially the French. Especially the French, because the French have massacred the Muslims. I mean, especially in Algeria.
Yeah, you had like how many, over a million innocent human beings who were terrorized, oppressed. Is that the small number, or what's the conservative number, would you say?
The conservative number, so the governments, like France gives one number, Algeria gives another number, but a third party said 700,000.
700,000 people dragged to the streets. I mean, tied to cars. You have to this day, you have skulls. I mean, where's France supposed to be some of the most civilized people, but still collecting skulls to this day of,
Yeah, it's very weird.
isn't it?
Weird. It's
But
very weird.
how do we relate that today? What do you think when you see, I mean, France is supposed to be the champion of liberty, equality, universal rights, human rights, but then you see the oppression of the minority there. And you say have specific laws. For instance, a person is now mandated to wear a mask over there. But if that same woman wears a niqab, she can get fined or a ticket. Is that correct? You have 70 houses or more of worship, houses of worship where people are coming to worship the creator of the heavens and the earth. The same way Jesus, Moses, it's not a new religion, the same way of life that they all preached and practiced. They're just continuing that legacy. So those houses of worship are getting shut down. Charities. Where the charities, the Muslims are out there trying to eradicate poverty. And now, under this whole pretext of what? What's the pretext, the excuse? And now they're shutting everything down and oppressing this small group of people there.
Yeah, so there are two, three things that are happening. Number one is that France specifically has an allergic reaction to Islam. And, even amongst European countries, if France has a very big allergic reaction to Islam because of its own past. And, the Muslims that are in France are the same ones that they colonized. You know, there's a reason. There's a reason that happens.
That's ironic, huh? That's very interesting. So you oppress a people, colonize them, you drive them out of their country, so now they come by you, and now you're telling them to go back home.
And see, there's two level. I mean, there's a whole bunch of issues here. The first issue is, like, for example, in the U.S. Okay, so they have this Judeo-Christian morality. Okay, Judeo-Christian morality. When it does something wrong, it feels like it feels bad, like they have a sense of guilt, right? So then they say, okay, Black Lives Matter, yes, we shouldn't have done this, but they keep doing it. So it's like they do it, but they also want to feel not guilty, okay? The French take that to the next level because Christianity has basically vanished from there in terms of their recent history. So their sense of guilt is not, they don't feel like they have to justify, like if, let's say, we had red Indians in France, and let's say if we had blacks in France, they wouldn't feel that they need to necessarily justify that guilt that's inside them because it wouldn't simply be there, okay? And so then they just say simply what they really feel, okay? And so that's one aspect. And with what's coming in the world, the next phase in the world, where now Israel will take over a lot of the geopolitical situation, it's going to be exactly like that. It's not going to be like America, where if they do wrong, then there is a collective consciousness that partly feels bad, and the other's like, no, it's okay. We did this. There's like this internal struggle of good and bad within. It's not going to be like that in the next phase of human history. And so let me go back to France. The first problem from the modern times happened with the very idea of nationalism. To me, nationalistic flags are the modern idols, you can say.
Modern idols. Okay, so the current flags. Say that again, the last part.
Yeah, I mean, these are new, these are just the new, every century there's a new form of shirk, you can say. Shirk changes its faces many times. And so one of the shirks of this century, or this last century, the new shirk of mankind, started really in France with nationalism. You see, the French Revolution brought nationalism. So now, instead of, standing up to God, you're standing up to this flag. You're like venerating these borders, artificial borders. You're venerating these artificial borders as if they have intrinsic meaning in themselves. And so, this idea of like American exceptionalism, for example, or French people think that they're exceptional just because they are French. So, like, literally, I mean, dividing people based upon borders of ethnic groups in Europe, particularly, and then America, and then saying, okay, this is how we're going to get along. But the whole thing is set up pretty much as a caste system. Now, having said that, when you have divided yourselves as a nationalistic group, then demographics become important, you see. And so the fear in America, some American intellectuals, especially the neocons, and the fear in France is that what are we going to do when the culture essentially changes, right? What are we going to do when there are less white people or their influence decreases and they're more of the minorities? Now, this is a very important point because the Quran mentions this point. You see, when there are two Western prophets in the Quran, and you see, Western civilization starts from Egypt. Okay, Western civilization starts from Egypt. So there's one prophet who came into Egypt, which was Yusuf, and one prophet that left Egypt, which was Musa. Okay, and so when Yusuf was coming in, the statement that was made about him and Musa was exactly the same. They said the Imra'atul, like the minister when he was buying him, he said, "Nattakhidhu walada," we will take him as a son. Oh, yanfa'an, or he'll benefit us. And then when Imra'atul Fir'aun, when the wife of Fir'aun saw Musa in the waters, she said, "Oh, we'll take him as a son, or he'll benefit us." Exactly the same word. See, the West has this policy of taking others in. But that policy changed when Bani Israel was becoming too big. So now that the governments had changed, the dynasties had changed, the same people are there, but now the Qibti tribe, which was the Pharaoh's ruling tribe, they were less in number. Bani Israel were growing in number, and that became a big problem. And that's when Fir'aun started to kill off the boys, one year after another year after another. I mean, every other year he was killing out the boys in order to reduce their population, because they have to somehow control these demographics, and that's a very fearful thing for them. So when you have a country based upon nationalism on the one side, and then you see the demographics changing, okay, the influence circles changing, and so so these are the people, yes, you did influence, you did want their resources at one time, you went out and got them, then you felt bad and you said, okay, fine, come over here, we like some of you elite one, because what the way it starts, right? So first there was like imperialism, direct imperialism. The indirect imperialism actually was meant for the elite of those societies to come to these societies, get indoctrinated, and go back and rule over there. That was like the main idea. But then it became what it became because there's some good people, so they have some good policies, and then you have the main agenda there too. So Muslims started coming into France, into different European countries, and then now they're worried, wait, we got too many babies being born. Like literally in France, for like every French child born, there's like 10 Muslim kids born. Like in the hospital, if you go to the hospital where the children are being born, there'll be 10 Muslim children to one French person. Even mentions is wamdadnakum bi amwali wa banin. We will give you strength with wealth and children. So this process of of where Allah gives us more children, and this is one of the big problems, is that the European world is reaching its old age, and the Muslim world is reaching its young age, meaning in terms of the larger population. So the Muslim world has more young people than old people. The Western world is coming to a point where they're going to have more old people to the young people, and they're very worried about what is that going to do to the economics of the whole society. So that's another worry. So there's the demographics worry, but with the demographics, there's a big worry about, okay, we're like reaching our old age and we have less because they produce less. So they have less young people, more old people comparatively. Muslims have more less older people, more younger people, because more young people were produced. I think somebody wrote a book saying that you need to produce an average of like 2.5 on average per family to keep civilization going, right? So that number, they've gone under that number. Even in the US, it's under that number unless you include these Hispanic people.
how do you connect also now Austria? Austria has also coined now, they have a new term, a new fight, kind of similar because of some attacks that happened there. And obviously we condemn that. We don't condone anything like that. That's very clear. But to go ahead and take some isolated incidences and then to go ahead and now smear a whole group of almost 2 billion people. So now they are, under that pretext, going to go ahead and start, you know, probably doing the same thing, oppressing the Muslims, those who want to submit to the one and only creator of the heavens and the earth. So have you heard this term in this fight now in Austria?
I don't know specifically about Austria, but the idea of political Islam is very important because, you see, where this is very important to understand what I'm about to say, inshallah, right now. I think it'll be beneficial. And that is that, you see, the world is looking for a system of justice. Okay? The world is looking for a system of justice and has been for the last 200 years. We've gone from, you know, communism to socialism to democracy. We've tried this, we've tried that. And so the humanity is thirsty for a system that will show justice. But secularism demands that all religions be made equal. You see? And so you can't really show any one religion in its full form. So if you establish, so the biggest threat is that if you establish a real Islamic society where you can bring in the Western intellectuals, for example, or you can bring in the intellectuals of the world and say, come and see this society, how this functions, a society that would have no alcohol, a society that functions without drugs, a society that, you know, does not allow the sexual anarchy, where women are literally becoming objects. Right? You know, in Islam, when we're talking about the French, this like ties in. Like this whole thing, and you know, Dajjal's biggest attack, one of its biggest attacks will be on women, because they'll convince the women that we're actually giving you freedom, which in fact is like completely the opposite. Because in Islam, you give a private space, like not private, you give a sacred space to women. You can't address a female in Islam unless she addresses you. Meaning it's like she is royalty. I can't just go in the street and start.
I like what you said. So the woman in Islam is like royalty. And what do you mean? Like when you say the job, go ahead. Yeah.
You know, everyone has their personal space and then their social space in terms of friends, and you have your public space. But Islam adds a special sphere for women.
Doesn't allow what's prevalent, like in France and other places, where you got the groping phenomena.
Yeah. So, you know,
that's an actually pandemic in and of itself.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, just those whole sexual anarchy in all of the world, really, even the Muslim world for that matter. But, it, you know, it stems from these ideas that Freud has and, you know, where he felt that sex was the biggest human urge. And then now, you know, everyone, there's a sexual anarchy. And when there's sexual anarchy, what does that mean? That means that, you know, well, your society is going to go down because you'll have less children,
yeah,
less families.
But you said now you listed a bunch of concepts in Islam, in their family, in their preservation, you know, of the rights of women, all these things that they don't know about. But this coming from what they call this far right element, they actually, I've interviewed people who are part of these parties, but when they looked into Islam, they actually connected with all of these concepts. That's the ironic thing.
And this is a very important point, what you're mentioning, especially in the U.S., that, see, the liberal side is not palatable to Muslims from a moral perspective, even though they're nicer to us. They're nicer to us, but they're not palatable to us in terms of long-term relationship that would be meaningful. On the other side, you have the Ashabul Fil, the Republican, the conservative, you have that, the neoconservatives. If we overlook the fact they don't like us and we work with the conservatives, and we, because they're the Ahlul Kitab, so there is a common basis between us and them, we have to overlook the fact that they don't like us, and we have to find segments within the people of Ahlul Kitab that we can work with as a community in order to move forward. Because moving forward with the liberals, that's just a dead end. That's just the atheists. And then the neoconservatives, the complete right side, that's also just not going to work. We have to find the right alliances that we have to work with, the right type of Christians, like a lot of Black Christian churches would work, Hispanic Christian churches would work. They wouldn't be on completely on the right side of the neocon agenda either.
Let me. I got a lot of things I want to cover. We have a short amount of time, so now you have. We mentioned okay, political Islam, Islam, complete way of life covers all these things.
Point was is that they're scared of Muslims establishing a model because there are two Islams. There's an Islam as a mazhab. Islam as a mazhab, you can say, is how you your mode of worship, where you pray, how you pray, your rituals, your birth, your marriage, your death, your rituals, your halal, your haram in terms of food, your clothing. Okay, they don't mind that. That's palatable to the secular society. But if you talk about an Islam that will fully express itself as a system with its own economic system where there's no riba, which is heaving havoc on the society.
Interest, the common day interest.
Yeah, interest. You know, a non.
This is also prohibited in the Bible, isn't it?
Prohibited in the Bible had been considered prohibited in Christianity till the 15th century.
Yeah, so nothing is new here. I mean, that's another proof of Islam. Islam meaning submission
no
to the Creator.
Sharia that you don't find in the Bible.
And then when you said a term that might get us, in some trouble, but this is like the Ten Commandments. This is the divine law. This is from the Creator. When Moses went up and get the law, this is what we're talking about, Sharia. It's mentioned over 200 times in the Bible, actually. Sharia is mentioned in the Bible. So this is what Jesus also called to Moses, Noah, the last and final measure, Prophet Muhammad. But isn't this another proof of Islam that not only does it give you the blueprint to run your life, but it's a blueprint to run society, humanity, to make it more peaceful, just, because no justice, no peace. So to make justice prevail, so peace can prevail, it's a complete blueprint for everyone, for the individual and society.
One of the first steps for that is that, families have to be given power back as families. The secular state takes away power from the families. I can't educate my children the way I want them to be educated. I cannot, live where I cannot live independently as a family, as family members. Everything has to be registered. Everything has.
That's the attack. That's the attack now in France. They're actually even denying homeschool now. They are at the young ages of 4 or 5. They're also trying to take this away.
Yeah, and so they think somehow the state has more compassion than the parents would, and so they've done the same thing with parenting. They take a few bad parents and then use that as an excuse to take away the rights of parents across the board. And the same thing is being done with Muslims. But they are really scared that if Islam should rise, I mean, imagine all the big businesses. Look, all big businesses make money doing haram. The big businesses like loaning money, for example, alcohol, cigarettes. These are the people that are making the money in the world. Okay, and so there's very few exceptions to that, but majority of the rich people they become rich doing wrong things.
Yeah.
If you here's another example. In Islam, you cannot have corporations in which you can sue the corporations, but not those who run the corporations. I mean, since when does this make sense? Right. And so you some person, he runs a corporation. He gets his golden parachute, which is the money they give him when he's going to retire because he's been doing very bad. He's stolen millions of people's money. And now you run after the corporation and not the people. That's haram in Islam. Mm-hmm. That people that are running a corporation are meaning running a business, are responsible for that business. You cannot have corporations in Islam in the sense that we have them today. And anyway, sorry. So.
Good points, really good points. Before we go on to the next thing I want to cover, this is also, we'll move on from the France and this Austria where you had these attacks that happened that we condemn. But you had things that are uncovered. And that's what you can also touch upon, critical thinking, right? That certain things are fed to us And Allah, God Almighty, in the Quran tells us to, when it comes to us, you know, to verify, to check, to do use some, you know, the gift that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave you, but not just be like sheep, just blindly following everything that the mainstream media is pushing out. And you had some instances where you had certain people screaming Allahu Akbar, and then they unfolded that, they weren't Muslim, but they were trying to pretend to be Muslim. Did you hear about that? And then you had, then you had also a priest on priest fighting, but then that doesn't get covered, right? But as soon as now someone, again, identifies as a Muslim, or you got some lunatic that, you know, they can put Muhammad as his name or whatever, or Abdullah or something, then mainstream media just runs with it all day and night. You see these hypocrisy and double standards.
One of the things that when you try to understand the system of disinformation, one of the key elements is that, look, if I have my news station and you have your news station and somebody else has their own news station, so one is CNN, the other is ABC, the other is whatever. So if we're all running our own independent news, we would all be showing different news, right? Because there's so much happening in the world, right? There's so much happening in the world that there's enough space for us to, more than 50% of our news would be different from one another. Okay, but the fact that, you know, the news, the whole news media, the whole industry runs with the same news, okay, is itself very problematic and shows the level of insincerity, or the level of there's no genuineness. They're all running with the same headlines, whereas in the world there's hundreds of things that are happening that are not reported that are just as interesting, really. Okay, so so for example, in America, there was hardly any talk about the wars that were happening between Azerbaijan and Armenia, for example. That's just an example. But that's happening, but no one talks or does talk or focus. But the focus is always the same, which makes no sense from an from a perspective as an industry. Because if you go back to the, even in the U.S., when the U.S. used to be U.S., I consider that, you know, when America was, like, I was born in the 70s, so the America of the 80s and 90s was very different than the America that we were here. When we were young, we had news reporters, actual news reporters reporting on corporate America, people actually going out doing investigative journalism, right, which has now gone down. It hardly exists, investigative journalism now. It's all about everyone having the same headlines, the same headlines, the same headlines. And so this now seems to be more like akin to like propaganda than actual news. And that's one of the problems. And then, you know, along with it come many other issues. But if, brother, if I can go back to France, I was mentioning the allergic reaction France has, especially to niqab and hijab. You see that there is a idea called the panopticon. And the idea of the panopticon is that you have to be able to see others, and while others cannot see you. This is Jeremy Bentham, one of the philosophers of England, came out with this idea that the key to power is that you see your opponent, but you cannot, and they cannot see you. When the French took over the Muslim world, one of the biggest complaints that their generals had is that even though we occupied their land, we cannot see them because the women were wearing niqab. Okay, so now, even though you conquered the land, you don't psychologically feel in control because you don't see what you conquered. You don't see your trophy, so to say. And so this became a big national debate in France. This whole phenomenon became a big national debate. And so the issue of hijab and the issue of niqab has been in debate in France, in very strong, what they, in their own words, masculine voices, very strong masculine voices. In fact, it went to the point where they even gathered women and forced niqab out of them just to be able to take their pictures, to say, because they didn't feel they can show off to the elite that they have to, without showing pictures, see their niqabs are off. That's like the complete takeover. The complete takeover is that, you know, we got them to take off their niqab because they didn't psychologically feel, because now they've, you know, in the streets, women are walking and they're covered. You can't see them. And so that really bothered them. And anyway, people have written about this, and it really captured their fantasy, their desire to like rape, if I may say, rape the Muslim woman, you know, in terms of control. And so this is carried on, and it carries on in France, out of other Western countries, more than any other place.
So what do you think, how do you apply critical thinking skills at this time, day and age, where we understand that when they talk about in the media about Islam and certain things are put out there, the people who know Islam, they know, okay, this is false. They see, they learn Islam from the books, from the Quran and the Sunnah, that it promotes justice, peace, love, happiness, family, unity, all these beautiful, beautiful concepts. And this is what draws people to it, the pure monotheism, all these other things. And we can go on and on about that. But then you hear in the media, and then it's something totally different, but we can recognize it. But then a lot of times the media becomes, like for a lot of Muslims themselves, magic. And they just take everything that CNN, Fox News, and all the other pundits out there give them, and they don't question. And as soon as you start to question, you do critical thinking. What Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is commanding you to do, now labels start getting put out. Conspiracy theorists and other labels and whatnot.
I think part of your question is, how do we know, or how do we identify disinformation?
Yeah, how do you identify in this day and age with so much information, fake news, and some people who go too far and they start coming up with their own theories? But obviously, we know that Shaitan is out there conspiring day and night. So now, when you're not, the evidence doesn't point to, and it's not going down easy, when what the mainstream media is telling you, there's other sources of information, independent news sources and whatnot. But and then it contradicts the mainstream, and now a lot of times, even as Muslims, we have a hard time accepting that.
Yeah. So you know, over here there are two, three things that, inshallah, I think I can that have been beneficial to me. Number one, like I said, when you see the same headline across the board, then at least be suspicious.
Same headline across the board, be suspicious. Number one.
Yes. Number two is, when you see a camera at the right place at the right time, be suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, somebody just happened to have their camera on top of a building at the right place at the right time, and they see just exactly what was going to, it was like as if it was prearranged.
Interesting.
You know, so this idea of prearranged videoing is very, very important. The other thing is, if the scenario that they present to you meets Hollywood standards of a movie.
That's a good point.
Okay, so if, because
meets,
you know, things
meets,
don't
meets
way,
Hollywood standards.
Yeah, so I'll just give you an example, and I may be right, I may be wrong, but the idea is right. Okay, the idea is right. The point I'm meaning, the example I'm giving may be right or wrong, but the point is right. When this Saudi brother, Khashoggi, the journalist, was killed in the Saudi embassy, okay? And so what was said, you know, somebody came and he was sawing his bones, and you know, a special group of people came there. And like when they make it into a Hollywood movie, right? When they're saying, okay, they're cutting off the necks, you know, like chopping off necks, that's a Hollywood movie. Okay, when the story meets Hollywood, a Hollywood movie standard, like you're like, oh, that would make a good scene, right, as a director, because they've already captured our imagination with these movies. So when they give us a story that meets the standard of those movies, it already comes with certain ideas and certain music behind those scenes, certain ideas behind those scenes. And so we have a more visceral reaction to that, a stronger reaction to that. Because we've been, you can say there's been this internal predictive programming. So when they make a news event sound like it's a real news event, but the story is very much something you would actually put in Hollywood, you have to be very suspicious if that's true or not.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, you know, in our case, we have the advantage of having a prophet that really told us about, subhanAllah, everything. You know, I mean, verifiably told us about everything. I mean, it's like, you know, there's hardly anything in terms of major events that he has not pointed to in one way or the other. And so when you see that, like, for example, about news media itself, just the Quran itself, I mean, even before the sayings of our beloved Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the Quran itself regarding a certain group of people, the Quran says, يُرِيدُونَ لِيُطْفِئُوا نُورَ اللَّهِ بِأَفْوَاهِهِمْ. So this is now, they want to extinguish the light with their mouths, with the media. So when you see a certain media talking unjustly against Islam, that's a sign that, see, that becomes a litmus test. Wait, I know you're lying about this for sure. This is not Islam. And you're running with this story. And don't tell me you're so naive that you weren't able to figure it out, that it's not that bad, right? That it's not like this. So when it is, when you are beyond the point of innocence, it's not a matter of innocence. When you see that they're intentionally saying things about Islam that are not true, then that is the litmus test that then you have to really be careful about everything else. And in fact, you have to analyze everything. Then now they're actually giving you the ammunition that you can now actually take their stories that they're giving you to peel the onion to see, okay, really what's going on? Because the assumption is that it's not true. And, you know, there's this, it's not just Islam. It's sometimes, especially in the liberal media, it's attack on religion, whether it's Christians, Jews, Muslims, religion, traditional ideas, there's an attack on that regardless. And then, of course, with the Republican or the conservative, they thrive on anti-Islamic sentiments because, you know, I mean, it's like the Ashabul Fil, because Ashabul Fil, you know, in the time of Abraha, when they were going against the Kaaba, they were also right-wing Christians, okay? And so we have the right-wing Christians and the right-wing, or the party of the elephant today. And so there's a lot of similarities.
That's interesting, because you'll hear from one end there all this fake news that they are very skeptical about. But when it comes to Islam, what they're fed, they just take it.
Yeah.
It's so, a complete,
you
know, double standard.
There you see the contradictions.
Yeah, so we can tell them, come visit us. Come hang out with us. Come have a tea or coffee. Visit your local mosque.
Yeah, wallahi, I mean, all you have to do is just become friends with somebody that goes to the mosque. And it would benefit in anybody tremendously, just not even from anything except getting to know people that are more peaceful. I'm talking about internally peaceful, that you can feel that when you're with Muslims, inshallah.
Yeah, one brother was telling me how he was friends with one Christian, and conservative Christian, and he was really respecting the values of Islam. He saw, I mean, and he was impressed. And then he went back to his community, and he wanted, you know, to form some kind of connection. But he got a lot of kickback from that. He got a lot of pushback from that. But when we talk about and unfold, you know, the family values, you know, the morality code, all these things, the concept of God, the love of Jesus, his mother Mary, all these beautiful similarities, you know, we have a lot in common. Just to close up now, and you connected a lot with this term Dajjal. Can you go ahead and just connect all of this, these concepts we have in Islam towards end of times, you know, from the verbatim word of God Almighty, the Quran, authentic hadith that we have from the last and final Messenger Prophet Muhammad, and the understanding of the best of generations, the Sahaba. One thing that comes to mind, where you'll have, you know, people who are truthful will be looked at as liars, liars will be looked at as truthful, this deception will be far and rampant. How do you equate that? Because you talk a lot about this, about the term Dajjal.
Yeah, so bismillah. So we, like Christians, look, we, like the Christians and the Jews, believe that there is a coming back of a Messiah. Okay. We believe that the Messiah is coming back. Christians believe the Messiah is coming back. The Jews also, as many of their groups, they believe the Messiah is coming back. And we, like them, also believe that there'll be false messiahs. And so we both agree that messiahs or prophets or somebody saying, I'm Jesus, is going to come back. And we also believe that there will be liars amongst them. And so this we have in common. Where we where the Christians have a certain bias, even though it's not scriptural, but the bias is that this Antichrist will be Muslim. Okay, this feeling, even though I want the Christian brothers and sisters to know that throughout Christianity, throughout the history of Christianity, it was always thought amongst Christians that the Antichrist would be Jewish. Okay, and the reason for that is that who killed your God? You know, or who you blame for killing your God is the Jewish people. And I'm not singling out Jewish people, but I'm only saying that the narrative at that time was the Jews hurt Jesus. And so it was, that is how they actually had good relationships with Muslims. And they didn't look at Muslims, okay, the Antichrist will be coming out from the Muslims. It was unimaginable. And you have to remember something very important. One of the great Catholic philosophers actually said this. I forget his names right now. Usually nations or civilizations that share borders is where conflict happens. Okay, so Islam and Christianity has shared a border for almost 1,000 years. Okay, and when you share a border, conflict is inevitable at some point between two people, right? It's like having a neighbor for 1,000 years. You're going to run into some problems sometime, right? What the Christian world and therefore even the Muslim world has to realize is that we've been neighbors for a very, very long time. And out of the 1,400 years, we've been pretty good neighbors, okay? Pretty good neighbors for the majority of that time, with the exception of maybe 300 years of Crusades. Other than that, we've been pretty good neighbors, and we've had pretty good feelings, especially at the religious level. At the religious level, Christians favored Muslims to the point that even, I'm sure you know this, that even the catechisms of the Catholics mentions that Muslims as a potentially saved group of people. And I think it's Catechism 814, something like this, that says, you know, those people that believe in the one true God, follow the way of Abraham, so on and so forth. Christians had good feelings towards Muslims for the majority of their history, unlike what media has done now. You see, this all started with a Bible called, which is like there, you know, like in Islam, we have a primary, you can say exegesis of Quran, explanation of Quran. So they came up with a new exegesis of the Bible, called the Scotsfield Bible. Okay, I believe that's what it's called, the Scotsfield Bible, which was published by Oxford and then given to all the Christian seminaries for free. And that was the beginning of the turning point, especially in the Christian circles, where the anti-Islamic sentiment started to rise, number one. Number two, because of what happened with Protestant Christianity, because you see, when Protestant Christianity separated from Catholics, now the Jews and Christians are reading the same book, okay? And the Quran even mentions that قالت اليهود ليست النصارى على شيء. So this kind of like Quran predicted this kind of like change that would happen. And so you'll see how I make this point. So the Quran says the Jews say قالت اليهود ليست النصارى على شيء. The Jews say Christians have no claim. They don't know what they're talking about. وقالت النصارى ليست اليهود على شيء. And the Christians said the Jews have no claim. And then Allah says وهم يتلون الكتاب. Even though they're both reading the same book. They're both saying they don't have a claim, even though the Old Testament is common between them, right? And so they're both pointing fingers. So this is one angle of history. The other angle of history is that where kunu hudan aw nasara tahtadu, become Jew or Christian, you'll be guided. This is the coming together of the Judeo-Christian civilization. What has happened to Christianity and what Christians have to realize is that they have to unlock themselves from this Scotsfield Bible version of Christianity that in the modern times, where it's been completely detached from the past. Okay, the Christianity of the past, the Christianity of the forefathers, the Christianity of Saint Augustus, the Christianity of Martin Luther, the Christianity of all the big, huge personalities of Christianity of the past are in complete antithesis of where Christianity is today. And so they themselves have to go back to their own books. And if they do this, they will come at the doorsteps of Islam. You see, the Quran says, Ya Ahlul Kitab, O people of the book. And Allah is talking here to the Christians and the Jews. Lastum ala shay. You don't have a claim. Hatta tuqimu Torah. There is the myth of Christianity. And then there is the text of Christianity. You have to go back to your own text to actually see what your forefathers were actually saying. And if you go back to the actual Bible, you will find that you have a lot more in common with Muslims, and you will appreciate everything from hijab, like the covering of the women. And in fact, there are women, Christian women, that this is becoming a popular thing now. Again, even in Christianity, in Orthodox places, like in Greek, in Russia, women are beginning to cover themselves. And a lot of thanks to Islam for that. And even though, unfortunately, a lot of Muslim sisters are taking off the hijab, Christian sisters are wearing the hijab now.
Interesting.
But the point I'm trying to make simply is that you need to go back to the text of Christianity and see what your forefathers were saying about those texts, mm-hmm. not following the myth. Don't learn the Bible through the media, because that's just mythology.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It was real nice having you with us. And if people want to look you up, where can they find you?
Just type in Sheikh Omar Baloch on YouTube and, you'll find me.
Jazakallah khair. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. Spend some time with us. We'll see you next time, inshallah. Jazakallah khair.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. And thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of The Deen Show. And what can we take away? If you're somebody who's new to this channel and you're wondering what Muslims and Islam are all about, you've seen that there's one thing that you might get from the media, and that's something distorted. But Islam is actually the house of peace, and we're all looking for peace and purpose. And that's what Islam, submission to the Creator, not the creation, gives you, invites you to the house of peace. Because when you're connected with your Creator, then you truly know yourself. And when you truly know yourself and your purpose in life, that's when you get peace and contentment in life. So if you'd like to learn more, call us 1-800-662-ISLAM. Ask those tough questions, but start a conversation. Connect. If you're a conservative Christian, if you're somebody who believes in the Creator of the heavens and earth, get to know the concept of God in Islam. Ask those tough questions. What do you guys believe? Do you really believe what the media is telling us, what we've heard? Ask the tough questions. Have a conversation. It's really that simple, because you understand that the media lies, that the media is about hype. There's a lot of propaganda, but there's a lot to learn. And if your mind is open like a parachute, it's going to work. We can have a conversation, and you will only benefit yourself, and you got nothing to lose but so much to gain. So continue to tune in here to The Deen Show. Subscribe if you haven't already. Hit that notification bell. Support us on our Patreon page, and we'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum. And if you like this episode of The Deen Show, like this video, share this video far and wide, and support us on our Patreon page so we can continue this work. Thank you for tuning in. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
Subscribe right now.